Hey everybody, what's up? What's going on? Hello, hello, hello everyone out there listening. So, allow me to reintroduce myself. Hello and welcome to all faithful listeners. This is the My Journey to Healing podcast, and my name is Shalandria Ficklin. So, welcome to season two, where we are going to talk about some things. We're going to talk about a lot of things. Welcome everybody. Welcome everybody. So, let's get started. So, this podcast is named My Journey to Healing because last year, which is 2019, I actively started trying to heal from my past and just all the things that encompassed and embodied. For those of you who do not know, I am divorced, single, and thanks. And I have 3 kids. And as we go on with these episodes, I'm going to unpack different parts of that journey. When I was married, the first time, there was abuse, there was infidelity, child, you name it. It was most likely there. So what happened was, I believe it was the kind of situation where neither one of us wanted to be the first to say goodbye. And basically what happened was, as a believer, people would always tell me the churchy things, thinking that they were helping me and everything, but they did not know what was going on behind closed doors in my house. They did not know what was happening once the doors were closed, the locks were securely fastened. Once my kids were sleeping, nobody knew. And I suffered in silence for years, and I said nothing to anyone, because there was much isolation and all. It was a lot of things. It was a whole lot of things. And so on this here podcast, we are going to unpack it. We are going to unpack it. We're going to talk about it. We are going to dissect it. We are going to look at some of the things that I've learned along the way. We're going to look at the red flags I missed, all in hopes that in sharing with you guys where I've been, you don't have to go there. So let us start from the beginning, shall we? But before I do, I'll give you a little brief bit of who I am, where I'm from. I realize some of you guys may be people who listen to season one, but some may not. So for those of you who don't know, again, my name is Shalandria Ficklin. I am from Louisiana, Natchitoches, Louisiana to be exact. And I'm a Southern girl. I sing. I am a worshiper. So I may dabble in a little bit of singing on this here podcast. You might hear a song or two or three or however many I choose, when I choose to. So when I was single, before I ever got married, I was in a really, really good place. However, there were some emotional wounds that I was walking around with, that I wasn't dealing with, that I wasn't attending to, and everything. And I'm going to insert an analogy here that I heard in divorce care. We're going to talk about divorce care. We're going to get there. We're going to talk about all the things. But the analogy is this. If your foot is broken and you take a shot of Novocaine to your foot, your pain will stop. But if you keep walking, eventually you're going to look down and you're going to see the white bone sticking out and up from your foot. And that analogy was given when we discussed being divorced and going from relationship to relationship to relationship to relationship and delaying your healing and not taking the time to really, really, really dissect the situation, not taking the time to do an autopsy and look and see what caused whatever it was that went wrong to go wrong, like not taking the time to really understand. And so that's kind of where I was the first time I was single. Before I ever got married, I was holding on to so much. And again, I didn't even realize I was doing this, but there were things that I wanted in childhood. And I'm not talking about material things. Like, there were certain things that I wanted in childhood. And again, I'm not talking about material things. I'm not talking about no ponies or no bikes or nothing. I'm speaking like emotionally. There are things that I wanted in my childhood that I did not get. And because I was raised in the generation where children were seen and not heard, I never really voiced my opinions per se. And what happened was, the very few times that I did, my feelings were disregarded, and they were brushed aside, and they were not taken seriously. And so what that did was, what the cause was for me to look for that love that I thought I needed or that I thought I wanted in all of the wrong places. I looked for that love that I thought I needed or I wanted in friendships. I had friends that were horrible for me. I had friends that meant me no good. And I actually, when I was in seventh grade, this is horrible, but I'm going to tell you anyway, because you're on my podcast, and clearly, you ain't got nothing else to do, so we're going to talk. And I was in seventh or eighth grade, and I had this big group of girls that I was friends with at the time, and they are more so the type of girls you call frenemies, where they're your friends, but at the same time, child, they just as well might as well be some enemies. When I was in seventh grade, this group of girls, I dated this guy. I ain't gonna say his name because we protect the innocent. but I dated this guy, and like, we broke up. And after that, every single one of the girls in the group of friends that I had in seventh grade dated this guy. The same one guy literally dated every single one of my friends, I think, except for one. except for one of my friends in seventh grade, but everybody else he dated. And that's just an example of the frenemies that I had. So that was the looking for love in the wrong place of friendship. Searching for the love that I thought I needed and I wanted caused me to look for love in the area of men. As Mama Hattie from Love Thy Neighbor would say, when in the men. And what happened, how that looked for me, what that looked like for me was that I would be in relationships with guys who weren't good for me and who meant me no well. And my ex-husband just happened to fall in that category. And so that longing for that love that I wanted caused me to get into this relationship with my now ex-husband. So I met him when I was 19. I married him when I was 21. And when we got to the 2-year mark, which was when I was 21, he hit me. Now, let me say this. His representative stayed around. So, 2 years this representative stayed around. And he was nothing but kind and sweet and funny and charismatic to me. And maybe I was in too deep already. Maybe I was too in love. And I'm doing air quotes. You can't see me, but I'm telling you so you know. Maybe I was too in love. But for whatever reason, I missed all the red flags. I missed all the things. And because his representative stayed so long, and because I thought him hitting me was an isolated event and not finally the breaking forth and the breaking through of who he really was or is, whatever you want to say, I thought because it was an isolated event that, you know, it was literally that. I thought it was just, you know, maybe he had a bad day or maybe something is wrong. And I made excuses. I excused it away. I asked him why. He never told me. And like, I left him for, we broke up, of course, and we were broken up for 4 days. And like, I used to say those were 4 of the hardest days of my life, because what I did not know at the time was that, how do I say this? I don't want to say he was grooming me to be abused, but I mean, it kind of fits. Because at the time, he and I would spend all of our time, like I would always be at his house. And I would always be at his house. I would always be with him all the time. I'm talking about all the time. Days, nights, weekends, everything. Everything was him. So I think back now to that time and I think about the subtle things that I missed. Like I said, I've missed all the red flags, but there were subtle things that I missed. Just like I said, him hitting me, I thought at the time was an isolated event. I now understand it was a telltale sign of abuse. It was a warning sign, if you will. Just like in your car, we have check engine lights. Him hitting me was a check engine light, if you will. And again, with abuse, they have all different types, forms, cycles, you name it, they have it. Another form is isolation, where you do not deal with your family and your friends and anybody that loves you. And so when you are in an abusive relationship, marriage, whatever you want to say, either one of two things is going to happen. Either number one, you're going to be isolated. That means every relationship, every family member, every friend, everybody who loves you and can counteract the lies this person tells you is going to be pushed away, and you are going to not deal with them at all. Like, you're going to not be in communication with them. And that's number one. Or number two, you're going to be integrated with your family and your friends, but there is going to be contention to the point of breaking away of relationships and like ruining relationships, sometimes to the point of no return. I have experienced both. When I say I married him when I was 21 and I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, my oldest child, and I was in school at the time for cosmetology, and I really loved it. I was really, really good at it. It made me happy. It was something that I really enjoyed. I was actually in my last semester, believe it or not, when I got pregnant with my daughter, and he went to the military. So like he was in basic training. I found out I was pregnant, and then I want to say between basic training and AIT, we made the decision that we were going to get married. And I might have found out I was pregnant when he was in AIT. Either way, we decided to get married after the process. So he came home and we got married. No lie, we got married on Thanksgiving Day 2007. I will never forget that day for as long as I shall live, because I did not tell my mama that I got married. His family knew the day it happened. Like, literally, we had a... It was a mess. It was a whole entire mess. We got married in a restaurant. It was actually a restaurant. It was a Justice of the Peace type of wedding. The lady who married us, she had this restaurant, no lie, that was called the Pizza Shack. So we got married in this place called the Pizza Shack. I could not make this up if I tried. We got married in this place called the Pizza Shack on Thanksgiving Day. My mama did not know that I was married because I didn't tell her, because I was low-key like, I can't believe I did this. There was a whole thing where we wanted a wedding, and everybody had these strong opinions as to what we should have done, what we should do, who should marry us, and all this stuff. But I noticed everybody was giving their opinions, but won't nobody giving us no $100 bills attached. Wasn't nobody writing no checks. Wasn't nobody digging in their pockets or their bank accounts. Like, hey, you know, I think you should do this, but here go $5,000 on my suggestion. People was giving they empty suggestions with no money and thinking that we had to honor those requests. So, because of that, we decided, you know what? Just instead of piecing. So, we got married in this place called the Pizza Shack. Believe it or not. The lady who married us, I don't even remember her name. I wouldn't tell you if I knew. But either way, the lady told us we were the best dressed couple she'd ever married. It was so, oh my gosh, it was so, now that I think of it, it was just a different kind of day. And I always heard people say that your wedding day, what the weather is like, is a depiction of what your marriage will be like. And on the day that we got married, I remember it was a beautiful day. The sun was shining, but it was cold. Like, It was cold, but the sun was shining. And it was a beautiful day, though. And that is an accurate depiction of my first marriage. There were days the sun shined, but overall, it was cold. It was really, really cold. And there's that. So I want to, because we're still in October, and October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, I want to kind of unpack some of the warning signs that I missed, because I've never been, that's the only time in my entire life that I was or ever will be abused, in Jesus' name. But there are some things that I missed that I now realize that I missed. One of them was jealousy masked as concern. So I remember this one exchange where I got a new watch, and the watch was real nice, and it was a mud watch, and one of his friends said to me, "That's a nice watch," and he like grabbed my arm, like my wrist, to look, get a closer look at it and like pull it up to see what it looked like. And before, like, it wasn't even a second of response time, he slapped his friend's hand and he literally cursed him out and told him, "Don't ever touch me ever again for the rest of his life in no kind of way." And after that, he proceeds in the same breath to ask me, "And why did you let him touch you?" And I'm looking at him stunned, because number one, there literally was no response time. There was not time to say anything. And the man was looking at my watch. Like, he wasn't trying to talk to me. And then he literally was looking at my watch. But that is just, I'm sorry, but it was outrageous. But that's one of the signs. One of the signs is jealousy masked as concern. And the excuse was, "I'm just concerned about you and I don't want anybody to," you know, all these things. And there were more instances where people, like men, would look at me and immediately that jealousy would kick in. And again, I didn't know at the time that that was a sign of a potential abuser. I did not know that. I didn't know that was a sign of abuse. There are so many subtle things that when you are in the getting to know you phase with a person, that on the surface could seem like it's a good thing, but really it's something bad. So if you are in a relationship with somebody, if you are married to somebody, well, if you're married, I mean, well, I don't know. But if you are in, I'm strictly talking to people who are dating. If you are dating someone, be it a guy or a girl, and they are really, really jealous, but they always say things like, "I just care about you. I love you." That's another thing. If a person tells you they love you too fast, be careful. Watch it. I'm not saying run for your life, but I am saying watch it. Watch it. And I'm trying to think of another sign that I missed. It was the jealousy masked as concern. Oh, the isolation. If the person that you are dating, like, I remember I had a friend at the time, and she and I were like, we were best friends. We had been friends since I was in 7th grade and she was in 6th grade. She was from Houston, I was from Louisiana. We met in junior high and we were friends up to the point we were like 19, or I don't even remember the point at which we stopped being friends. But I remember all of my friends, he would be like questionable about. Not because the person was a bad person, but because they were in a position and they had my ear. And again, I say isolation is a big part of abuse. It goes hand in hand. And I was very, very much isolated, because going back to the story I was telling, whenever I was in school, he got stationed in New York at Fort Drum, and he had to go, and he told me that he wanted his family there, meaning me and my daughter, and I didn't want to go. Just gonna be honest, I didn't want to go because I was still in school. I think I only had like maybe 3 months to go or so. I had already paid my cap and gown fee, and I really, again I say, I really, really liked what I was doing, and it was something that made me happy. So, and I was good at it, by the way. So we talked about it back and forth, and unfortunately for me, I made the decision for family. So I dropped out of my program, even though I was in my last semester, because my plan was to finish school, take my test, get my license, and then go to New York. And then once I got to New York, I could take their test and then get my license in New York. So no matter which way I went or where we moved to, I'll be able to make money and sustain myself or whatever. In abusive relationships, financial abuse is a real thing. So there's that. And so I made the decision for family, and I went to New York, and I was abused literally from the first day that I arrived forward. I did not know that I was going to be abused. If I would have knew that, I would have stayed in school. I would have finished my program. I would have did a whole bunch of stuff differently. I would have did so much differently. However, I didn't. And, you know, I made a decision. I made a decision that I thought at the time was for the best. But I was isolated. I did not talk to my family and friends and anybody who loved me, really, honestly, for months on end. I lost every friendship I had at the time, except for one. I have one friend that I call the friend who survived my first marriage, because she literally is the only one that survived my first marriage. Everybody else that I was friends with before I met my ex-husband, while I was with my ex-husband, all of those friendships are gone. I'm not friends with any of those people anymore. And I think what saved my friend and I, the friend that I'm still friends with to this day, and by the way, we have been friends since we were little girls. And so another subtle sign is discord. There will be discord. If you do deal with their family and friends, there will be discord. And I remember one time my one friend who survived my first marriage came to my house. She came to our house to see me. She was in town, and because she's from the same city as me, but she lived an hour away at the time. She came and she met him, and she said, you know, I introduced him, of course, and she was like, hi, it's nice to meet you. I've heard a lot of good things about you, or whatever. And, like, we went on talking, and he left. That day, after she went home, he questioned me for hours, like, literal hours on end, trying to figure out what it was that she heard about him that was so good. And I just was astounded by that. Like, wow, is it such an anomaly that someone would say something nice about you? And it made me mad, and it frustrated me. But that's a whole nother thing. When you are single, singleness is a time, is a very, very special time to really look inwardly and to do some self-repair and to analyze your decisions and to analyze relationships that you've been in and the common mistakes or the common things that have gone wrong. It's a time of preparation if you desire marriage. If you want to be married, singleness is the time to work those kinks out. It's the time to prepare yourself to get your life together. Like, it's a time to do all of those things you couldn't do or you wouldn't do per se, that you wouldn't have the time to like slowly focus on if you were in a relationship with someone. So that is that. I wanted to say that. So that's where I have been. Now let's talk about where I am going. Okay. So now I am single. I have been divorced for 6 years. I have been totally free indeed for 4 years, I would say, because what I didn't say was after we got divorced, I was not being transformed by the renewing of my mind, because I still was holding on to what I had in mind. And I heard Bishop Jake say, when things go wrong in relationships, it's not so much the person that we miss, but it is what we had in mind. And I hadn't relinquished what I had in mind. I hadn't let go of what I had in mind. So because of that, when something happened that remotely looked, when a promise was made that looked remotely close to what I had in mind, because I hadn't relinquished it, I grabbed a hold of it and everything. And so that's what happened. Now, because of that, I went back and we tried again, and of course it didn't work. And I came back with a newly and a freshly broken heart, and a big mess to clean up. I have since relinquished what I had in mind. I have since taken full accountability for my part of everything. I have since acknowledge where I am. I have since learned how to be self-aware. I went through this program called Divorce Care. I actually started that this year. It was a 13-week. I'm saying it all wrong. But it was a 13-week program. That was pretty dope. I gotta say, it was really cool. I thought it was fake. I literally signed. I found it on Eventbrite because I love to learn. I love new experiences. I love learning new things. I am a DIYer, so I love working with my hands. I am a creative, so I love creating things. And I was on Eventbrite one day, and I happened to see this thing called Divorce Care. I did not know what it was, but basically it's a support group of people who've been divorced. And this is something that I'm going to unpack in the episode coming up. I used to say I didn't have the luxury of stopping and crying on the side of the road, but I had to cry on my way there. And there is no specific destination. It is, you know, how we are all on our way somewhere, and it's just a place. And I guess in this particular analogy, it will be the place called healing. So while I healed, I didn't have a chance to like sit down and like completely break down and let my heart break. But I had to learn how to cry on my way there. I had to quickly leap into action to be a single mom. And truth be told, I was always a single mom. What I do today, I've literally done since my kids stepped foot on the earth. Since they slid into the home plate on earth, I have done what I'm doing today. And that's the thing about my first marriage and everything. Like, perspective is everything. How you see stuff is 95% of the battle. I mean, it was so much stuff that I endured. Horrible, crazy, dumb, stupid stuff. And a lot of it was my fault. A lot of it was because I was too embarrassed to be honest and to say what was going on with me. And I didn't say this, but when I was a kid, I was groomed to be silent. I always say that jokingly, but like on a more serious note, I learned how to shut down. If conflict was arising or something like that, I wouldn't say anything. I would immediately go inward and I'll bottle it up. And then as time would go on, I would keep bottling it up. And then something small would happen and it would be like a volcanic eruption. And yeah, it would be like an emotional volcanic eruption. So, and what I mean by I was groomed to be silent was, when I was a kid, I love to sing, but I have a cousin who loves to talk. I was the kid that when you're black, you get the speech. When you go to the store, every time you go to the store, you can go to the store 16 times in a day. You finna hear this speech 16 times in one day. Look, when you get in the store, don't touch nothing, don't look at nothing, don't ask for nothing, because you ain't getting nothing. We would always get the speech. And I would always say, yes, ma'am, or okay, whatever, right? My cousin would literally say yes. Get in the store. I wouldn't touch nothing. I wouldn't look at nothing. I was a serial rule follower. I mean, it's who I am. It is what it is. So my cousin would get in the store, and as my aunts and whoever we were with would be putting stuff in the buggy, this girl would be putting stuff in the buggy. And She just ain't. So she would be sticking stuff in the buggy. They would be like, don't touch nothing, don't ask for nothing, don't get it. She wouldn't even ask for it. She literally would pick it up and put it in the buggy and wouldn't say nothing. That's the crazy part. Like, she literally would be quiet the whole entire time. So they didn't know she was doing anything, right? We get up to the counter and they start taking stuff out. Half of the stuff they got in the buggy wasn't even stuff that they got. She used to do that all the time. And like, when we would play, she would always be talking. She would always have something to say all the time. So what they would do would be, let's play the quiet game. And of course, if she liked to talk, she always gonna lose. So what they did was, one day they started a new rule. We played the quiet game for money. Baby, let me tell you something. Oh my goodness. You bring your little $5 over here if you want to. You bring your money over here if you want to. I can guarantee you I'm going to be quiet. And then when we get done, I still ain't going to say nothing. Because as a kid, $5 is a lot to a 6-year-old. Child, let me tell you something. That was back in the days of penny candy and candy ladies and pickle ladies. That was in the days where people sold stuff out of their houses. That's something that our kids will never know about. That was in the days of, oh my gosh, it was so, that was when you literally could go to somebody's house with a dollar and buy nothing but penny candy and fill up a brown paper bag. That was during those days. And when we would play the quiet game for money, you already know I'm about to win. I'm taking all your money. Don't let us be playing for no $5, no $10, no $20. Whatever the amount is, I'm finna clean you out. And then when we get done, I still ain't gonna say nothing. And the funny thing is, my cousin would, of course, always lose because she always was talking. She would never stop talking. So the way it would always happen would be, my cousin she would always lose. And I am a person who, one of those people who, child, somebody need to teach me facial control.
Like, I need to learn how to not, whenever you see me, anytime you see me, I don't have to open my mouth to tell you how I'm feeling, because my face is most likely going to remove all the doubt. So when I was a kid and we would play the quiet game for money, I learned how to make my cousin get out by making faces. And I know what's wrong, but hey, we talking about money here, whatever. You got some stuff you did in childhood. You probably was like, ah, that was messed up. I did that. It is what it is. We over that now. But my cousin would be looking at me crazy or something, and I would make a face, and then I would stop. And she would say something, or she would do something, and she'd be like, oh, you make me sick. She would always like blurt out stuff like, somebody made her sick. She would always say that. And, you know, and they be like, ooh, you out. And I'm like, and I look and I smile like, ooh, girl, them $5 is mine. So, yeah, that's what I mean by I was groomed to be silent. But I learned too well, because in those days when we played a quiet game for money, they used to literally have to tell me, it's okay, you can talk now. The game is over. And I learned in childhood how to be silent. I learned in childhood how to shut down. And, you know, some things you pick up in childhood is good, some things are not. That was one of the not so good things that I picked up in childhood. I learned how to be silent. I learned how to go inwardly with my thoughts and with my feelings and not share. And when I was married, that was volatile. Like, that was, oh my gosh, that was one of those things that I did. That was one of those things that was my responsibility, and something that I did that contributed to the ending of my marriage, because I wouldn't talk, because I was made to feel as though my feelings were invalid, that no one would listen to me and everything like that. And not only that, I used to, when I was a kid or even like a young lady, there was a thing about me where if you let me know that you did not value my words, my thoughts, my feelings, or whatever, I would never share them with you. If you didn't want me to have something, I did not want it. There would be nothing that you could say to me that would make me want it. I was that way to a T, and that's just, you know, it is what it is. So now I am single. I am preparing myself for marriage. I am learning myself. I am becoming more and more self-aware. I am trying to learn all the things. I am raising 3 awesomely wonderful kids. My daughter, by the way, will be 13. I'm sorry. She'll be 13 next year. I am writing. I have a blog. The address is shalandriaswritingforchange.blogspot.com. Y'all can go and read my blog. Please do, because I love reading. I love writing. I'm recording this in the middle of a storm, as you can hear. It just thundered real loud. Yeah. It just thundered really, really, really loud. So I'm recording this in a storm. I didn't think the weather was that bad, but it's okay. So, what else? I am a writer. I'm a worshiper. I like to talk. I went throughout my life thinking that I was this really quiet, reserved, introverted person, but I find that I really like to talk. And everything that I thought I knew about myself, God has proved me wrong. God has shown me otherwise, and I think it is hilarious. But I am still an introvert. I am quiet. I do like to stay to myself. I am reserved. So yeah. And I would like to continue this podcast and just kind of share my journey and where I've been and what I learned. And not only what I learned, but what I'm learning, because I'm learning a lot of new stuff about myself. I'm learning about love. I'm learning about relationships and all the things that I want to talk about it. So if you'll oblige me, I look forward to it. So I'm trying to see. Yeah, my blog again is shalondriaswritingforchange.blogspot.com, and that is spelled Shalondrias writing for, spelled out, not the number, change.blogspot.com. So I believe that is all. I think that's all right now. That's all I want to say, I think. So right now I'm becoming who God had in mind when he created me. That's what I'm doing. It's exciting. It's hard sometimes. It's frustrating sometimes. I'd be like, oh my gosh. I used to think that there was a place. Well, I used to think that healing was, you do this. Emotional healing and physical healing are not the same. If you broke your leg today or tomorrow, you would go to the hospital, they would do an x-ray, they would see that your leg is broken, they would cast you up, they would tell you wear this cast for 6 weeks, your bone will be healed, and then you take the cast off and you're good to go. Emotional healing is not the same thing. It's not the same thing. And I find it so amazing and interesting that when you go to therapy, or as my old therapist used to say, the spa, it's like a spa for your emotions, sort of. So if you think about therapy as a dreaded place, think about it as a spa. You go to the spa, it's a spa for your emotions. So, y'all need to start going to the spa, honey. Go to the spa and take care of yourself, because you can't take care of nobody else if you ain't taking care of you. I saw ample examples of taking care of everybody else but not yourself. And honey, I would not be the one. I'm gonna take care of me if I don't take care of nobody else. And that sounds very strong, but that is easier said than done. So this podcast is a way of taking care of myself. My blog is a way of taking care of myself, because I'm honoring my feelings by sharing them. That's something else that I say. You're going to get some nuggets here and there and everywhere when I talk. Because that's just how I like to live. Just how I like to live. And also, too, it was something else I wanted to say. I don't know what else it was. So I guess I'll see you guys on the next one. Peace and blessings. I love y'all. See y'all later. Thank you so much for watching. I forgot to say that. My apologies. Thank you so much for watching. I'm saying watching like y'all can see me. Thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you guys for listening. There'll be many more episodes. I'll be back. Peace.